Alrighty, April 3rd. How's it going? What is up? Good morning. It's Cody Jansen with you on 12 Ounce Sports World Hockey Report Live, coming to you wherever you consume your media. It's all over the place. Everybody knows that by now. What's up? How's it going? 8:05 local time. A little bit of a late start. Do apologize about that. Hey, gotta get some things arranged. We got a big show coming up. For those of you who haven't heard, haven't seen, Couple of good guests. We got the beauty, Adam Irwin Trout, coming on at 8:15. He had a couple of hot takes during the week. For those of you who don't know, does a lot of the social media. So, I mean, if you're seeing tweets, don't always get mad at me. I've seen a couple of things, yes, we do agree on. I mean, that's just going to happen. You know, one of those things is the dub draft. Yes, I am going to ask him about that. I think that's just fair because we've gotten very similar opinions on it. I've gone on a couple of shows and I've already said blatantly that it's absolutely ridiculous why it hasn't been pushed back a year. Happens about that. He also maybe sparked a little bit of fire by talking about some overrated players in the NHL. I mean, that's all his opinion, right? He's allowed that. Jonathan Willis is going to join us at 8:40 tonight. We'll talk a little Oilers with him. That's at 8:40. Jonathan Willis from The Athletic. If you haven't read his work, you should definitely go do so. The Athletic, they were doing a thing. I don't know if it's still going on, but it was absolutely free to read The Athletic or to sign up. You got 30 or 60 days free. So if you're not already signed up, would highly recommend going and checking it out. Obviously, I mean, that's pretty much the best journalism in the business. That's the best, especially for hockey. I mean, if you're thinking about Canada hockey, The Athletic's kind of that pinnacle. So would highly recommend going to check that out. 8:55. We do have to get into Friday bets. We're going to. I mean, everyone knows there's still some hockey going on. Yes. We are talking Belarus hockey. That video of them partying inside was absolutely insane. I don't know how they pulled it off. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like whatever that country was. I don't know, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, who banned the word coronavirus. Absolutely wild move right there. That makes no sense by any means. But still, it's Europe. You can't even control those guys. They're just wild animals. Some of them. Let's not group them all into one. It's kind of like saying East, West, Canada, all the same thing. Well, there is a good amount of differences. Let's be honest right there. Doesn't matter. Nonetheless, moving along. I thought this was a funny one. I mean, we tweeted it out. You connect us anytime on Twitter at World Hockey RPT, on Facebook as well, at World Hockey Report. I still believe, I truly do, that Eddie Lack's Calgary Flames pads were his best. I mean, he even responded to that one. He's, you know, active guy on Twitter. You can thank him for that. But he thinks that his Vancouver pads are the best. I disagree. I really do disagree, and I hate to say it, but his Flames pads were way better. They were clean. They were crisp. They just had a good feel to them. And so, while I can respect the fact that he thinks his Vancouver pads, the retro ones, I may add, so they are pretty cool. I'm not going to say that they're bad, but I'm also not going to say that they're better. I can't. I don't think that they're better. I just think that those Flames pads were so clean and crisp that they just worked out. The Vancouver ones, they kind of have that off-white cream and the maroon. There's a little bit going on with the whole Vancouver. You know, you got that 1-0 split in half. Now I'm nitpicking here. You know where I stand. Flames pads, definitely a little bit better. Shout out, I already said I was on a podcast this past week. You can go check it out. Tyler Kuehl. Check it out. The Kuehl Podcast. hit them up anytime. We did share the link on World Hockey Report on our Twitter page. And just some other news to pass along. This was a tough one to see. It's not like I've ever played in the tournament, but I've obviously followed it along, and it was really cool this past year to see the Alberta Junior Hockey League compete in it with their all-star team. But the 2020 Series Junior Club World Cup in Sochi, Russia has been called off. There's eight different teams, I believe, that represent Canada for this. Or not Canada, the world, pardon me. And it was really cool that they were going to have the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. I get it, it's not an elite Canadian Junior Hockey League like the BCHL, you know, the AJ. There's other ones, you know, as a whole that are a lot better. But this was really cool for Manitoba. This would have been really cool for a lot of their players because how this tournament is put on is so top notch. It's unreal. I mean, it's a pro tournament from top to bottom, how it's run. Everyone who's come back from there has had good things to say. The broadcasts are incredible. The setups are great. And so, yeah, I thought it was really cool how they invited the MJ or how the Canadian Junior Hockey League picked the MJ. But anyway, that happens. We do have hockey today, this morning, 10:30. It's game 5, the Belarusian Pro League. Unal Staminsk facing off with Shakhtar Soligorsk. Yes, probably going to be watching that. And yes, that's Friday bets coming up 8:55. You don't want to miss it. Though, we got to get to one thing before Adam joins us on the show. NHL to Saskatoon. So the rumor was floating around a little bit on social media. It's a very crazy thing. It was Sean Simpson from TSN. You know, the NHL talking about Saskatoon as a quarantine site to finish their season. Now, I'm all in on this. Saskatchewan boy, know how much, you know, everyone in Saski would absolutely love to have an NHL team, would love to get the opportunity. But Saskatoon doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. Kind of weird. Like, you think of like, okay, well, if you're going to quarantine someone, you probably want to put them in a place where they're happy. Saskatoon? Very questionable. The rink's kind of out of town. Like, I don't think you're getting fans in there or anything anyways. So why not go to Vegas? Why not go to Arizona? Nicer place, at least. I don't know. My opinion. But yet again, some people haven't seen Saskatoon at this time of year. I get it, probably down the road. July, April, August, or August, September. Still, Saskatoon, I love the idea. I just don't think it's possible. Alrighty, we gotta go to commercial. World Hockey Report is brought to you by MyBookie. Non-AG, use promo code 12OZSports for a deposit match of up to $1,000. That's promo code 12OZSports on MyBookie.ag. And yes, Friday bets are coming up later on in the show. Off to commercial, it's Cody Jansen with you on 12 Ounce Sports. We're back. It's World Hockey Report live coming to you on 12 Ounce Sports, 8:17 local time. Cody Jansen with you. Joined now, good friend of the program, Adam Urban Trout joins us from good old Saskatchewan. Trout, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing great. Can't complain. It's Friday. I guess it doesn't really feel like a Friday if you're working from home, but end of the day, still getting by. It's like day 45 now without hockey, I think. Maybe we're going on 2 months or something like that. It's feeling like a long time. You getting by?
Yeah, no, like a lot of Netflix, a lot of random YouTube videos of old hockey stuff that you forget about, but barely getting by.
Just to clarify with all those TV shows, if you see a TV tweet on World Hockey Report, it's likely Adam. Likely not me tweeting about the Big Bang Theory. Although I do agree. I mean, we've got pretty similar tastes. Like the Office, obviously, if not the best show of all time, one of the best. Big Bang Theory, the start of it's absolutely legendary. I mean, yeah, How I Met Your Mother. I think. Yeah, those, whatever you want to call them, sitcoms, stuff like that. Pretty good. Alrighty, though, we got to talk some hockey. A couple of tweets blew up. I mean, we had some people who weren't too happy with it, but, I mean, you brought up who you think is the most overrated player in the NHL. I don't know if you said currently or not, but a lot of current answers. And walk me through why you think the most overrated NHLer plays out east.
I said PK Subban in the tweet. I guess like the train of thought, and I'll go against this on the underrated player, like the overrated player. You say that it's Subban because if he didn't play in Montreal, and if he didn't wasn't all out there on social media, and if he didn't commit to raising the $10 million to the hospital, like people look at him in the same way. Like he had like I think 3 or 4 really good years, like over 50 points. And we got a couple of replies being like, "Oh, he won the Norris Trophy." Well, the year he won the Norris Trophy, he played like it was the short season in 2013. So maybe a little asterisk beside that one. And then he went to Nashville and I guess had 1 or 2 good seasons. But after that, I think he's fallen off a cliff since then. And I'm gonna make a baseball reference here for you. And Marcus Stroman in Toronto, everybody, I love him. An average pitcher, but he played the Toronto Cardinals. Like, oh, I love Canada, I love Toronto. And I think Subban probably did that best in Montreal, which probably got him a lot more points there.
Now, I don't know. I guess this is, I'm just kind of throwing this out there. And you bring up some good points, but he's had some good seasons. But I mean, I guess if you consider him a middle-of-the-pack defenseman, I don't think he's really represented Canada too much outside of the World Juniors, has he?
No, and somebody said that he was at the Olympics, and he was there in 2014, but he was the 7th defenseman. He dressed 1 game. And I remember, like, during the Olympics, there's him and the 13th forward and third goalie, whoever it was, it might have been Flurry or something, but they're like, yeah, like we're screwing around in practice and stuff like that. We're having some good times at morning skates. And I remember Subban dressed up as goalie and took the gloves to play goalie at morning skates. Like, he didn't play there. Like, he played at the World Juniors, but after that, like, he hasn't really represented Canada.
I think that was a stacked team. It was 09, I believe, when he played, right?
Yeah, that was the Eberle goal.
Yeah. Ticker was on that team, too. Yeah. Pretty sick World Juniors. But, okay, so then if you would say that he's number one, and I'm assuming you're going off of current, you're not going off of, like, all time or anything like that, just current
no.
NHLers who are overrated, but who would you say is two then, if you had to give a name?
Oh, I don't want to start any fires here, but I'm going to say Taylor Hall. And once again, he plays in a big market, so anyhow, couple decent seasons there. He went to New Jersey and had a complete outlier year where he had over 30 goals and over, I think, 90 points. But if you look at that, he's never scored more than 30 goals once. He's never stayed super healthy in his career. And he's, like, I mean, I don't want to pick on the guy, but the stats are the stats. He left Edmonton, they made the playoffs, left New Jersey. New Jersey got a little better, Arizona got a little worse, and I think there's some people in their minds that think that he's going to get $10 million a year, and if he does, that's an overpayment. And I think my tweet a couple weeks ago put it best, where I heard somebody say that they heard a scout say he's an independent contractor on the ice, which is pretty accurate if you think about it.
Yeah, it could be a rough look on the next team who signs him. Well, we'll leave it there. I just don't... I mean, you make good points. I just don't see him helping the team as much as he's written out to be. You also brought up one of the, a great all-time debate when it's who's the most underrated player. Obviously, you're going to get a million different answers. Probably, I mean, a handful of guys that you and me have never actually watched like full seasons of in our lives. Maybe a couple of classic games and all that. But for underrated players, you brought up a current and you brought up a past player who really stuck out to you.
Yeah, so I think I said 2 current ones. So it's like he's not underrated, but at the same time, he plays in like a bottom three market in the league. So like, if he played in Montreal or Toronto, it's like he's being named like a top five, top ten player all the time. And then I think I said Nick Backstrom too, and just because he's overshadowed, right? It's like, oh well, it's pretty easy. Every pass he made to Ovechkin, he puts him in that, right? But it's like, you watch him closely and stuff like that, he's pretty unreal. And I think I said Ron Francis too, because like he's way up there in all time points and everything. And everybody's like, oh, like Gretzky, Lemieux, all those guys. But I think Francis was shadowed a bit when he was on Pittsburgh and stuff like that. So those three guys, like current and all time.
I'm gonna throw one out that I want to know your thoughts on this, because you know obviously 06 was a tough year for any Oilers fans. But Cam Ward, everyone goes, oh, he was a one-year wonder because he got the team to the Cup once. But, I mean, he played in a less-than-ideal hockey market. He's up there in all-time games played for a goaltender, all-time wins for a goaltender. Like, he's actually in top five, top ten for multiple of those categories. And his career is really only remembered somehow for 06. I mean, would you agree that he is one of the most underrated goaltenders of all time?
Yeah, probably, but I think that's, as we said, like, small market. He had the really good year in 06, but after that, it's not like Carolina is doing much to win. Like, they weren't really spending money. They eventually got sold a few years back. But now, if you want to pick another player off Carolina that's underrated, this guy came to mind, like, 5 minutes ago, Jacob Slavin too, right?
Yeah, unreal D-man.
Like, once again, like, how much better is, like, a Morgan Riley than him?
It's tough to justify, especially with Riley's year and everything that's gone on there, but that whole Carolina D-core, pretty underrated. Just how quietly good they've built their team, and yet again, the Millions' mistake is, I think they didn't need Jake Gardner. Why did they feel the need to go? Like, yes, he's a fine puck moving defenseman. Maybe he brings a little bit extra speed. You know, I don't even know. He's not even really running their power play all the time. But they really built a good defensive core pretty quietly. And I mean, I honestly think, like, the more I think about it, the Canes are a legit team, even if their number one goaltending situation is an absolute tire fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that they're still missing that depth up front. Like, Aho and Svechnikov are great players, but it doesn't seem like there's much. And I guess they did get Trocheck, but at the same time, it's like, there's a reason he was traded from Florida. So, like, I think they're missing that true stud up front, and Aho's almost there, but he's not quite there.
I'd agree with that. Okay, big news this week in the Western Hockey League. First player ever granted exceptional status, Connor Bedard. I mean, obviously going to be a Regina Pat. They like their tweets, so that just confirms it. It's pretty much Twitter official. It happens. So, I mean, with Bedard going, well, first off, let me get your thoughts on this. What's your thoughts on a 15-year-old playing in the Western League after seeing Matthew Savoy play whatever he did last season? And, I mean, even took a couple of scary hits that really could have been career changers for him.
Yeah, and he struggled, right? Like, he had, I think, 7 assists in 22 games. I saw him play once or twice, and he just kind of, he was okay, but like, if you weren't looking for him, you wouldn't see him. And I think, like, you look at Shane Wright out east, like, we obviously didn't see him play, but he's over a point per game player, and he had better numbers as a 15-year-old than McDavid did, probably on a better team than McDavid. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, I think I've watched Bedard's highlights, haven't seen him play. It's hard to say, like, he's playing against 14-year-olds right now, and he's going to be playing against 19- and 20-year-olds. I've seen the second and third overall picks play Riley Hyde and Braden Yeager, and I mean, for those kids in Saskatchewan here to put up a point per game in probably the best midget AAA league or one of the best midget AAA leagues out west or even in Canada is pretty incredible. And it's hard to say, right? Like, we haven't seen him play being 15. Like, there's nothing wrong with going back to measure and being the best player, but eventually somebody was going to get the exceptional status.
Here's the thing, and I mean, Wright's been unbelievable out there. I don't care how good his teammates are in Kingston. I mean, he is going to be something special. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. He's the best, you know, 15-year-old in the world last year. But with
assistant captain.
Yeah, that's crazy. But then when you hear his assistant coach, you know, talk about him, and you know, just the way that everyone in the organization talks about him. You know, they actually took him serious as a leader. As bad as that sounds, like, you know, he was actually, like, you know, a voice in the dressing room. He was a guy who they followed on the ice. So that's pretty impressive for a 15-year-old to be, you know, showing a 20-year-old or a 19-year-old how to play the game. That's pretty crazy. With Bedard, I've brought it up before, though, is, yeah, okay, whatever, he played in that Canadian school prep league, so he's playing against 17-year-olds as well. It's not as good as Midget AAA. And as you said, what's wrong with going to Midget AAA and being the best player? What is the dub hurt from that? I mean, aside from the publicity and everything, I get it. There's a whole marketing standpoint. But I just don't see as much benefit as everyone else does. I really would love to see this Bedard play in an elite level midget AAA, and I get it, midget AAA in British Columbia has gone absolutely downhill with all the school leagues, but it's still,
yeah, that's the thing too, right? Like, I was going to mention the prep schools, and you have everybody who wants to go to, like, the top, let's say, three schools probably are getting the best players, and then their numbers get inflated, right? Like, they go and play some team and they beat them 11-2, and it's like, oh, this guy had 90 points in 30 games. We're like, in Saskatchewan, like, all the teams are pretty even, right? Like, once, like, there's the odd, like, one or two teams that are just terrible, but, like, a lot of those teams are even, and, like, you're a point-per-game guy, and that's actually, like, really good, right?
Yeah, but, if you look at, like, I was looking at it a long time ago, and it was all the top scores from Midget AAA, and I was just going year by year, and it was pretty much like the top five every single year. They panned out into, you know, they had a long career in the dub or they're playing professional right now. And I mean, that just shows how good the league is.
We'll give a shout out to Cole Lind here. So,
and his brother.
Oh my goodness. Keiko. Yeah, but Cole and Garrett Peel, and they got sent back as 16-year-olds to play Midget AAA. And, like, I guess, they probably, like, everybody probably wanted them to stay, but it's like, no, go back, develop. So Cole had 45 goals, Garrett had 90 some points. They're the second and third round picks, and then they're both playing professionally and on the cusp of the NHL right now. Right? Yeah.
No, I totally agree with that. I guess last question for you, and I know you gotta get out of here right away, but I mean, you brought up the point of the whole, there's growth, there's a lot of development that happens between 14 and 15. And I think it was the Oil Kings prospect that you just retweeted a while ago. And, I mean, from the time he was drafted to the time he was signed, he grew, like, what, 4 inches and put on, I don't know, 30, 40 pounds. The WHL draft could be the stupidest thing ever with that whole extra year buffer. It's unnecessary, it's stupid, and yet again, you would get a lot better talent or a lot better draft if you're going to see these players play midget hockey, because then you know that they're playing against the highest level of minor amateur hockey, and it just makes sense to have it as 15s. Am I wrong?
No, not at all. And like, I think Bantam, like, I see so many guys, and like, I'm sure you played against guys, like, I play against guys, and you're like, they're just so much bigger and stronger at this age, but like, they don't, like, think the game well, so, right, they'll have 60 goals in Bantam, and in their second year Bantam playing against 13-year-olds, they go to midget the next year, they're playing against 16, 17-year-olds, they have, like, 20 points, and they struggle, And then it's like, oh, well, like this team took him in the first or second round because they're this 5'9" kid who was bigger and stronger than everybody else then.
Oh, so many. So many kids that were, if you're over 6'3" or 6'4", especially in Bantam, you're getting drafted. Like, there's no question.
Even, 5'9".
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of anyone. But, like, it's half about, like, they're just trying to predict size and everything. And, like, there's so much that goes into being a dub scout. It's so much harder than the OHL, other leagues like that and everything. It just, it's a crooked thing where I don't know why they haven't moved it up. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I haven't had someone put a viable argument out there as to why they shouldn't move it up. And, I mean, until that happens, I just think that they're stupid.
No, exactly. And, like, I truly wonder, like, how many of the picks would change because, like I'm not a doctor or anything, but, like, 14 to 15 seems to be the year that, like, a lot of kids either grow into their body or something like that. Like, there's not too many. Like, most of the kids, by the time they're 16, you kind of know what they are. But, like, when they're 14, you're not sure. And, like, as I said, like, a guy's building his way through Bantam. He gets picked high in the first couple of rounds. And it's like, oh, like, 2 years later, it's time for him to make the team. He's no better than he was when he was in Bantam because he's fully grown.
Oh, there's so many kids like that. And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, everyone goes, oh, they're a hidden gem. They were drafted 8th round in the dub draft. Well, no, like, I mean, 2 years of midget hockey can really change a player and how they develop, how they actually play and everything. And I mean, you played Bantam hockey too. There's some kids, and I think they don't have AAA in Saskatchewan. It's Bantam AA still, I do believe. But like, there's some kids that have no interest in working out at 13 and 14, and there's others whose parents are spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on it, and it doesn't mean that they're going to be a better hockey player. I mean, some players just kind of, it clicks that, oh, they want to play hockey when they're 15, 16, and so it's really, you're rolling the dice, it's a gamble, but that's kind of the Western Hockey League.
If you look at it this way, too, the leading scorer in the Western Hockey League this year is a 5th-round pick. And I saw him in Bantam. He's like 5'7", whatever, gets drafted, 5th round, midget triple A for 2 years, does pretty well there. And that's like 2 years later, he's the leading scorer in the dub because he's 6'1" or 6'2".
Nothing wrong with being the best player in midget triple A. As you said, I mean, you can't say it any better than that.
Yeah, what's wrong with having the puck on your stick more?
Exactly. Adam Urban Trout, our guest, joining us. Thanks as always, buddy. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Beauty. Sounds good, man.
There it is. Great interview. Great insight. As always, Adam Urban Trout. He's always got some good things to say. Great to talk to another Sasky guy about things like the dub. He's always got a few of those hot takes on Twitter. Got to enjoy that. Check it out anytime at World Hockey RPT on Twitter. We're on Facebook, World Hockey Report. Alrighty. Let's go to a quick commercial. When we come back, Jonathan Willis from The Athletic. Let's talk some Oilers back after the break. It's World Hockey Report live coming to you on 12 Ounce Sports. Cody Jansen with you here, April 30, 41, local time up in the Great White North. Joined now by The Athletic, Edmonton's finest, Jonathan Willis. Jonathan, how's it going on this Friday?
I'm doing really well. Thanks, Cody.
Where are you at? I mean, what are you doing to pass the time? Obviously, it's a little bit weird when you're not watching live games, but obviously you got to be pumping out content as a writer because, I mean, from my perspective as a consumer, as a reader of The Athletic, you're checking it more. You almost like you're sitting around bored, you're twiddling your thumbs, and you want to be reading as much as you can, although, you know, the live hockey isn't going on.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a... It's an interesting situation. I guess the one sort of silver lining in everything that's happening from a work perspective for me has been this ability to get into things that normally in the day-to-day rush of the season I wouldn't be able to. So not having – I mean, we all miss having sports. I mean, I don't think anybody's arguing that. But the ability to kind of get away from the day-to-day and dig into some research pieces and some other stuff that we've been wanting to get at is it's an opportunity. So we're going to just keep doing that and hopefully answer some questions that have been bugging me since the start of the year, and steam on.
That totally makes sense there. Now, I want to talk Oilers. Obviously, I mean, you're at the Athletic Edmonton, and it was a great year. Let's be straightforward for what people had expected in the offseason to what was actually put on the ice. I think there was a lot of successes, and a lot of it does start in Draisaitl. I mean, I think you can kind of hand him a few trophies here at the end of the season if this is the end of the regular season. You know, McDavid was great, but in your opinion, which or who on the Oilers took some of the biggest leaps forward this year? I mean, who did you see truly develop into a player who maybe you didn't think they would be?
Well, you mentioned Draisaitl off the top, and obviously he had a great year, but if you look beyond the big guns, Ethan Bear is, to me, Ethan Bear and Kyler Yamamoto, I guess, share the designation. Bear in particular, the thing he showed me this year that I didn't see when he was playing in Bakersfield is a dynamic quality as a skater, which I didn't know that he had that. And looking back on it with hindsight, I've kind of wondered if maybe this was a function of him being banged up last year. Because, I mean, he was great 2 years ago. He was still raw, and obviously he's developed a ton since then. But I just didn't see him taking this much of a step from where he was last season, where he was a very good American League defenseman, but he battled injuries all season. So maybe that's the answer right there. But no matter how you look at it, like, he stepped into a top four role the second game of the year and basically never stopped. He's their best right side defenseman, and I don't think anyone expected that. And then you add in Kyler Yamamoto. This is Yamamoto's third crack at the NHL roster. I think the things that you love to watch in his game, you know, his tenacity, his speed, his ability to back check, like that we'd seen. What came as a shock was his offensive ability. I think there's a little bit of error in the numbers. Like he scored on 1 in 4 of his shots, which probably is not going to continue going forward. But for him to come in and be a point per game player over a third of the season, that's just a phenomenal development from a player the Oilers really needed to come into his own. So I'd say those two guys are the biggest revelations this year.
And obviously the biggest change in the organization, aside from Chiarelli going and Holland coming, was Dave Tippett behind the bench. And this is an interesting one, too, where you read, some people give Dave Tippett a lot more credit versus others. Where are you standing on that? Like, if you've got to give Dave Tippett a report card today, what's on it?
I don't know if it's high marks for sure, maybe the highest possible, certainly an A grade. I don't know what people would want from him that he didn't deliver. One of the things that I really valued about him this year was his ability to be even keel. When things were bad, he was even keel. When things were good, he was even keel. He didn't go to the whip a whole lot when the team was struggling. Like, he really seemed to pick his times and places to crack down. He really seems to have a feel for keeping people at a certain level regardless of what the performance is, right? Because coaches talk about that all the time, trusting the process rather than necessarily the results game in and game out, and he did a good job of that. I thought managing the goaltending, I don't really think the Oilers have an above average goaltending tandem. He got a lot out of them. And then special teams, like you look at special teams, that's an area you always judge the coaching staff for. He unlocked that top power play unit. The Oilers have had a decent power play the last few years, but when you've got McDavid and Draisaitl together, decent is sort of a minimal bar. This is the best they've ever played on the power play. He found a new level for that unit and unlocked it. I mean, you don't want to take credit away from the players, but the coaching staff certainly deserves mention there. And the penalty kill as well. They made a real effort on it. They brought in personnel, and they executed a strategy, and it worked. So I think across the board, you have to give them really good marks.
You took my point there with the penalty kill, and I think a little bit of that comes from just the Dave Tippett buy-in. I mean, we've seen it in the past, but what he's got from Arizona, Phoenix, you know, with his Yost teams in the past, and you can definitely tell on the defensive side of the puck this season. I mean, and it starts with the penalty kill. It's, I mean, twice as good as it was last year, almost, it feels like, at least. And you also brought up the goaltending. I mean, kind of, I feel like it's a little bit also how he played him. Versus maybe how McClellan used his goaltending. I know they were different. He didn't have Smith, yada, yada, yada. But it's still, I feel like he used the goaltending wisely, and he ran with the hot hand when he could. But say game one of playoffs starts tonight, Jonathan, who's your guy? Who are you going with if you got to choose a starting goaltender?
I'd go with Mikko Koskinen. I think his numbers have been better all year. There's no doubt about that. Smith's had really hot and really cold runs. But on balance, Koskinen's been the better of the two. I think I hate to get into the whole intangibles thing because we're all operating on basically gut instinct and incomplete information when we do. I really think Smith does bring a leadership element to the team based on what players have said. And even just, you know, interacting with them, I think that's true. But you know, as much as that, if I'm right about that, if that's valuable, but you have to go with the guy who's been the better stopper of the two.
I would agree with that. I think a little bit of my gut does say go with Smith based on how he was for the Flames last year. But then if you actually look back at that series and look a little bit more in depth, he was either a 950 or an 850 goalie in that series. And I mean, that's in five games where that shift happened multiple times. And are you willing to risk it? I don't know. I feel like Koskinen's been a little bit more consistent. Jonathan Willis, our guest from the Athletic Edmonton, joining us. Going to stick with playoffs here. And, you know, for the Oilers, obviously, assuming we do get to playoffs and, you know, they're sitting in that two seed likely, what's one team in the West who you think would give the Oilers the most trouble if they ran into them in playoffs?
Well, I think the main thing, and I mean, it's a foregone conclusion now because I don't think we're going to see the rest of the regular season play out, but the one place you absolutely don't want to be is in that last wild card spot and pushed over to the Central Division meat grinder, because if you're going up against St. Louis in the first round, you're going to get it's going to be a very difficult series, either of Colorado or Dallas. I think St. Louis is the team I'd be most concerned about in the West, but either of Colorado or Dallas would be very tough out as well. I'm a lot more confident in their ability to beat teams in the Pacific. I don't think there's a team there that they really don't like. I don't think there's a lopsided favorite there. Looking in division, the one team I'd be nervous about again, and I hate to be boring and defer to the standings here, but it's Vegas, and partially that's because I think Vegas is the best 5-on-5 team in the Pacific by a significant margin, and partially it's team speed. Like, you look at Edmonton has gotten to be quite a bit faster over the last year, but I still think even with, you know, McDavid sort of skewing the results, I think they're a half step back of Vegas in terms of speed across the lineup.
I got a rapid fire for you. Do you like the Vegas pick, though? I think Vegas and St. Louis, they bring the most to the table in playoffs, and I think a lot of that has to do with experience, from my thought. But I got a rapid fire question for you. It's the Battle of Alberta. It's round one. How many games does this go?
Six.
Wow, okay. I was thinking there's only one answer, and that's seven, but six is an interesting one there.
Well, do you remember, if you remember back to 2006, that Detroit-Edmonton series, that should have gone seven games, but it went six. If you're the home team and it goes seven, you want to polish it off early if you can.
I feel like if it's going seven, it doesn't matter as much if you're the home team. It's more or less who won game six. That's the big one, because you know that, you know, the other team obviously has a chance to end it, and they don't do it, and now they got to play an extra game, which, you know, might not have been on their actual personal agenda. And I think that's so big, is the whole momentum thing. And I mean, great teams can obviously battle through that, as St. Louis, you know, showed last season. But when it comes down to game seven, I think a lot of it does come off of who's running a high.
I always feel that way instinctively. When I looked into it a few years ago, it didn't seem like there was a huge gap in the results. I haven't looked into it recently, so I don't know that this is still the trend, but I remember being very surprised. Well, it, not very surprised, but surprised anyway. A lot of times, like it, you'd think the team that wins game six has a bit of an edge. When I looked, it was pretty close to a coin flip, but I do feel like, you know, just instinctively, it feels right that the team that wins last has an advantage because they've prolonged the series and have already avoided elimination once.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I haven't actually looked up the data. That's just my experience. And I mean, you know, playing a little bit of hockey, I would say that's probably how I see it. Jonathan Willis, our guest from the Athletic Edmonton. Just to wrap this one up, I mean, are you able to give us a tease? What do you work on? What's going to be coming out next on the Athletic for you?
Yeah, got some interesting stuff coming. Just finished our 2020 NHL broadcast rankings, and now I'm going to dig into, we're doing a thing on one-hit wonders next week, and I've got two articles on the Oilers coming there, one on Alexander Selivanov, who, you know, it was one of those guys who people go, who, but was leading the league in goal scoring for a little while, and one on Chris Pronger's run with the Oilers and what happened afterward, which I think is, you know, it's not a great chapter if you're an Oilers fan, but it's maybe the most interesting chapter in the last 20 years of Oilers history.
That's awesome. There's a couple of one-hit wonders and names you haven't heard of in a while. I totally forgot about the broadcast one. I did read it. Awesome, awesome article. I mean, there's some great insight, but I got to put you on the hot seat here as your last question. Who's your favorite broadcast outside of the Oilers? You can't pick the Oilers. Who's your favorite broadcast to watch? If you're watching a game on TV, you flick on the channel. Who's your favorite, like, you know, game team to watch?
I like the team or the broadcast?
Broadcast.
TSN's production is fantastic. I think Ray Ferraro and Mike Johnson are two of maybe my three or four favorite color men in hockey. And anytime I hear Chris Cuthbert calling a game, I go right back to listening to Hockey Night in Canada on CBC, right? So as a kid growing up. So I like Cuthbert. I like Amy Ferraro or Johnson with Cuthbert and TSN's production, and I'm very happy.
Unreal. Couldn't agree anymore. Jonathan, thanks for hopping on this Friday morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Cody. Take care.
Jonathan Willis, our guest from the Athletic Edmonton. Good to hear from him. Catch up. Of course, I've said it before, you know, his work at the Athletic, what he's done, it's just so top-notch. It's great journalism. Would highly recommend. And as I said, I do believe that they got a promo going on where you can sign up, read a few free articles. They ranked every single local broadcast in the NHL. That was pretty cool. That's a great article, just if you want to read it. I mean, big Ray Ferraro, Gordon Miller guy here. Everyone knows it. But there's also, I mean, there's so many. And I think a few people would be maybe not shocked, but at the bottom. And I know, Adam and, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who are like, well, no kidding, Cody. But the Boston Bruins broadcast ranked very last. Now I get it. There's a lot of bias in the broadcast. And yeah, like, you know, Jack Edwards, he's a clown for a lot of it. But is it really the worst? Is it the actual worst in the NHL? I don't know. I can't rattle off every single broadcast crew. But I mean, if you get a good Jack Edwards game and he's not being, you know, trying to be a clown on the mic, I really do enjoy it. I really do. Sometimes he takes it over the line and yeah, a little bit far. Alrighty, it's Friday Bets to wrap up the show. I told you earlier, there's still hockey going on somehow. I mean, you got to go find the links. Luckily, people are nice enough to tag us in a couple of private YouTube links for some to find the games. Other times, I mean, the website I use on hockey.tv, I mean, don't tell anyone. Yes, there's going to be pop-ups. I mean, you're not going to be overly thrilled with actually getting to it. But once you get to it, you can watch some pretty good streams on there. And the bet. Okay, It's the Belarus Extra League of Final, Unost Minsk, and Shakhtar Soligorsk. Soligorsk is kind of, you know, the underdog. They're a little bit of a shock to get in. They beat off Grodno in the semifinals. Minsk, obviously, the capital city. I would say, I mean, don't cut me off, but this is government president funded hockey there. He obviously loves it. He's not going to cancel sports. That's why they're still going. There's, I mean, if you're going to place a bet, go to mybookie.ag, use promo code 12OZSports. They're going to match your deposit up to $1,000. Mybookie.ag, promo code 12OZSports. Looking on mybookie, no money line on this one. Obviously, Minsk is the favorite, but for them to win on the puck line, it's at minus 110. Pretty good value there. Plus, the two games in Soligorsk hit the under. Low scoring. You've got 2-1 and 3-0. So that's 2-3 goal games. But both the games in Minsk, I mean, there's 5 and 6 goals. So if the over-under set at 4.5, maybe it's not terrible value to go over. It's minus 130, so not great value. If I got to pick someone, I'm going with Unost Minsk at home. Chance to wrap up the series, win a championship. They've been pretty dominant. They cover the puck line half the time. There you go. That's the Friday bet. I told you, you know what I'm going with. Unost Minsk, puck line, over Soligorsk. Game gets underway in about an hour and a half. You know, if we get a good link, a good YouTube link, we'll tweet it out. If not, I mean, you're going to have to find one online. It's live hockey. Who's really going to complain? Alrighty, we got to wrap it up, though. Thanks once again to our guests. Adam Ermentrout joins us, the social media guru, the mastermind behind a lot of the content on Twitter at World Hockey RPT. Hit us up on Facebook as well, World Hockey Report. And Jonathan Willis from The Athletic Edmonton. Great work. And as you said, he's got a couple of big articles coming out. You don't want to miss them. Check it out at The Athletic Edmonton. For myself, Cody Jans and World Hockey Report, coming to you live on 12 Ounce Sports. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.